Welcome to Trailblazers, where we explore the inspiring journeys of entrepreneurs and industry leaders who are redefining success and making a lasting impact. These game changers are driving progress in our region and around the world. I'm Melody Bradford, your host. Welcome to Trailblazers on WDIY 88.1 FM. I'm Melody Bradford, and today I'm talking with a guest who's making history. She's a woman who's broken barriers, built bridges, and proven that purpose and persistence can rewrite what's possible in public leadership. Joining me is Tara Zirinsky, Northampton County's current controller, and now the new elected county executive, and the first woman to ever hold that position. From her early days as an educator and advocate, to her time on county council, to her unwavering commitment to fiscal responsibility and social justice, Tara's journey is proof that leadership isn't about power, it's about service, courage, and heart. Today we'll talk about how she got here, what it took to win in a politically divided time, and what's next for Northampton County under her leadership. Tara, congratulations and welcome to Trailblazers.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let's start at the roots. Tell us about your personal and professional background, where you grew up, who inspired you early on, and how those experiences shaped the leader that you've become today.
Well, I grew up in Bethlehem Township.
Okay.
And my parents are from Bethlehem. My dad's from the south side. My mom's from the north side. I have to say that some really important people in my family were the women in my family, very strong. My grandmother has always been inspirational, like Grammy Malik, you know. Mm-hmm. She came here from Hungary when she was 19 years old by herself.
Wow.
I have a picture in my dining room of her and her aunt when she was in Hungary. And we would walk by this picture all the time, and she would tell us the story of that picture was her mom and dad told her that she was going to get her picture taken with her aunt, and she needed to go with her. And while she was getting her picture, her mom took her father and her siblings to the United States and left her there to care for her grandmother.
Oh, my.
When she was 14.
Oh, wow.
So my grandmother saved up enough money to come here by herself to find her mom and dad. And she went to Northampton and, you know, she did the boat ride and she would tell us how, you know, her uncle gave her a little flask of brandy so that she could have some on the ship, you know, a little pear brandy here and there. And I always thought that was really kind of gutsy to just do something like that. But when she came here and she looked for her mom and dad, she knew where they lived, but they told her, you're 19, you have to take care of yourself now. We can't take care of you.
Wow.
So this is a woman who didn't know English, came to the United States, was rejected by her own family and had to make it on her own now. And she worked rolling cigars, and then she became a seamstress at Sure-Fit.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that she was going to buy the house across the street. And she did. Everything that she ever said that she was going to do, she did. And to me, that was so inspirational. So I've just had a lot of strong women in my family, and she's just one of them. But that story always stuck with me because she was so patriotic, and she loved this country. She had a picture of Betsy Ross and Abe Lincoln on her wall at home. And she always reminded us of how hard it was for her to become a citizen and how she had to take a test and how she wanted to vote and how important it was to participate in this country's democracy. Because as a woman, she had the right to vote here.
Mm.
You know, she could hold a job. She could own her own home. These things were luxuries she did not necessarily experience in Hungary.
That's a pretty powerful and inspiring story. And I almost, as you're speaking, I'm kind of envisioning her on your shoulder that night, right? as you know, the poll results are coming in, just, you know, probably just standing behind you, cheering you on. You began your career as an educator, author, and advocate. What was the moment that made you say, it's time, I need to step into public office?
Well, prior to being an educator, I was actually the director of Lifespan Faith Development at a church here in the Lehigh Valley called the Unitarian Universalist Church of the Lehigh Valley. Mm. And I went to seminary at Moravian Theological Seminary.
Oh.
So that's kind of my background, where I've always been very into social justice. I've been into organizing and into community development. When you work in a church, you work with different boards, you work with different committees, you're educating, you're leading. And I think that was kind of the groundwork for me taking a leap into politics. I became an educator, and that gave me that much more poise and presence as a public speaker, because you have to be able to get up in front of a class,
sure,
of like 45 people and lecture.
Mm-hmm.
So I taught philosophy and world religions and on death and dying and even Buddhism at DeSales. And so a lot of these things, I think, are a convoluted path, but they all led me to this one thing. As an activist, I really got involved in environmental activism. And there was the Pennies Pipeline was going through Northampton County.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember going to different municipalities in front of their board of supervisors and trying to get them to pass a resolution. At the time, I was the local coordinator for Food and Water Watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in front of one board in particular in Bethlehem Township, and the supervisor there didn't want to talk to me during public comment. And I didn't really understand why. I go, "Don't, I'm Tara Zirinsky. I'm here to present this resolution." And he just boldly said, "I don't want to talk to you." I was like, "I have two master's degrees. I teach at Northampton Community College. I know what I'm talking about. I'm the local coordinator. I've brought this group of people in here to talk about this resolution. We're all going to take our 3 minutes in this public meeting." He goes, "I don't want to talk to a woman. I want to talk to that man over there."
Wow.
And right then and there, I thought, I could have your seat.
Oh, wow.
I thought, that is one thing that I didn't see at these public meetings behind the dais was women.
Mm.
And I know on county council, Peg Ferraro was there forever and ever, but to be a really effective leader, I think you have to go into places where you're not comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to sit at the table and make a difference. And I think that we needed more women at that table. So after working for Food and Water Watch and teaching and juggling a bunch of little jobs, freelance writing, doing this, doing that, selling solar,
mm-hmm,
I ran for county council. And that was a very different thing because my eye was set on the state house. But Matt Muncy, the chair of the Democratic Committee, told me that I needed to start out small.
Mm.
And they needed somebody to run for county council. And I ran for county council because I thought I could make a difference here because of this pipeline that was going through. I became chair of the Energy, Environment, and Land Use Committee. I was chair of Economic Development. And I really felt like there is a way where sustainability and the environmental needs can intersect with economic development.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
They can work together. And so I think that was a really important sort of turn where I thought, I really need to do this. This was after Hillary had lost.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many women gathering, wondering what we're going to do. And I had knocked doors for our future with Hillary's campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And I knocked on so many doors where the women in the households said they couldn't vote against their husband. They had to vote the way he told them. And I thought, no one knows who you are in that voting booth. You can vote for whoever you want. They go, "Oh, no, if my husband found out." You know, and women were scared. And I thought, this is not the way that I want to be. And a lot of what I thought about was that women don't see so many other women in elected positions. Mm-hmm. Like we see Lisa Boscola. Mm-hmm. Great. Susan Wilde won in the same blue wave that I won in. You know, like I became county commissioner and then she ran for Congress the next year, I think. And there was still this momentum, but we still don't see enough women, I think, in local government. And there is this notion that, well, there's two people. There's two women. No, for forever, there's been nine men on the dais, you know, nine men on a board or you know, on that county council. When you see nine women on that county council, then we've reached parity, but not before. But people can't even envision nine women on the county council as council members. And no one really envisioned a woman as a county executive.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, so making that pivot, it sounds like you made that pivot and with the intention of kind of switching things up so that, and, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of wonderful men that have done wonderful things throughout county government and higher up and lower down and whatever else.
Yeah.
But it's also good to have that, you know, representation of women there. And you kind of have forged that path and that's inspirational, but it's also, it's foundational. You know, it really kind of set the stage, it sounds like. You've served on county council and as Northampton County Controller, two very different perspectives on government. What did you learn from those roles that prepared you now to lead as county executive, do you think?
Well, I have to say a lot of the things that I did on county council were try to find solutions to problems that I saw. When the Oliver C. Border House called me and they said that, you know, their home is in disrepair. There is walkways that are upended. There's black mold. There's no air conditioning. And the air conditioning that does exist there is only in the main hallways. And there's extension cords running everywhere. And I thought to myself, I'm going to go see this place. And when I saw and took pictures and then delivered them to WFMZ and then coached that group of people to come in during public comment and said, you're going to say 3 minutes here, you're going to say 3 minutes, three, three, three. Come in and you'll get your whole story out and we're going to make sure that we take care of this and find a solution. That was something that I thought, okay, I can do that. And then when we had the dewatering events in the Bushkill Creek, I said, there has to be some way to stop this, to hold Boozy Unison accountable for the dewatering events, because it was when their generators went off due to lightning storms that we needed to do something because there were these dewatering events and fish kills in the Bushkill Creek. So I got a group of people, all the different watershed communities and environmental groups and the municipalities that were impacted by that one thing, and we made a resolution. We made this Karst Geology Advisory Council. And we put that together, and everybody thought I was insane, but I learned karst geology from working on pipelines. And it is amazing what happens beneath the surface because it affects and impacts a lot of things. If there's sinkholes caused by the karst geology, then you have these dewatering events. And Boozy Unison was pumping 60 million gallons of water into the Bushkill Creek a day. So when they were no longer pumping that water in, the creek went dry.
Oh, wow.
So the solution was to get them to get backup generators. And it wasn't really that difficult, but you needed to make the ask and you needed to put a coalition together. So it's these things that I did on county council to build the coalitions and to bring people together, I think forged this understanding of how you act and how you can get things done within the community by using my organizing skills. And then as controller, I think then I just learned about the money. I took four classes on accounting and auditing, like reading financial statements and looking at how auditing procedures are done, what is the process, what are some of the policies that go along with auditing. And I kind of put myself into the role of controller, like all in for, you know, the time that I was there. And I learned so much about good fiscal policy mm-hmm. and how to create a budget. And because I took all these classes and I was on the Institute of Internal Auditors board, and I just put myself into that role as much as I possibly could. And I thought, oh, this is really going to be helpful as county executive, because it helps you organize your priorities by using strategic budget methods. So instead of presenting a budget like a bunch of line items, you present it like it's a priority. These are the priorities that we have. This is how we are funding them. These are the programs that are going to matter. And I think by communicating the budget in a different way, people will be able to see how county government works for them and what the priorities of what I hope they agree with and my administration are.
Sure. And I'm going to ask about those in a second. I do want to talk about the campaign trail, because campaigning today isn't for the faint of heart.
No.
What was it like running for county executive in such a politically divided time? And how did you stay true to your message and, quite honestly, your values?
Yeah, that's always really difficult, because it is really easy to slide into the muck, I want to say. You know, everybody else is down in the dirt, slinging mud at each other. And how do you not do that? How do you not take it personally? How do you not get mad? And I have to say, a lot of what helped me was my understanding and my practice within Buddhism. Mm. You know, you're not attached to the outcome. You understand that there are skills that you have and there are skills that you don't have. And people are the same way. They're skilled and they're unskilled. And so if somebody is making fun of you or using an ad hominem argument, you just realize that it is their lack of skill. And so you have to have compassion for them. Mm. So in an odd, roundabout way, all my religious training and all my training in Buddhism really helped remind me and stay grounded in why I'm here, what it is that I want to do, and how I want to move forward.
Wow. When you learned that you had won and that you had just become the first woman ever elected to county executive in Northampton County, what went through your mind in that moment?
I honestly thought it was a dream. Because I was like, I can't believe this is actually happening. Because the moment that you think something is possible and you put everything into motion and you see that it is a reality, you know all the steps it took to get you there. And you know that not all of that was easy. Some of that was very painful, mm-hmm. you know. And so you have to kind of take into consideration everything that you went through and be very grateful for that whole entire process and realize that so many people helped me along the way. You know, there were people in that room that night that had been with me since my first county council race. Mm. There were people in that room last night that were from the church that I worked at in 2005.
Wow. 20 years ago.
And so it's people like that that believe or believed in me enough to help put me in that position that I have to recognize and be grateful for. Mm-hmm. So a lot of what I felt in that moment was just this overwhelming gratitude for what we were able to achieve together.
Mm-hmm. And the tribe that surrounds you.
Yeah. And there were a lot of people there, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it felt like a lot of love in that room.
That's awesome. Now that you're stepping into the executive's office, what's your vision for Northampton County? What are your top priorities as you begin this historic term?
Well, this is going to be a challenge, no doubt. As I look over the budget, there are a lot of things that are not funded. And I'm wondering how it is that we're going to be able to fund them in subsequent years. I looked, we're not funding the pension this year. We're going to have to fund it next year. We have a very slim margin in our general fund and then also in the emergency stabilization fund. if anything happens, and we know it's a possibility that things could happen. We don't have a budget yet from the state. We don't have a budget from federal government. Mm-hmm. We are, you know, threatening to furlough human service employees. You know, we haven't supported OSI or farmland preservation in our budget with county funds. That's something we did in the past. And also two programs from the courthouse, well, from corrections, aren't being funded. LEAP and also Pine Brook Services. These are two programs that reduce recidivism in the prisons. Mm. We also know that our county employees aren't really paid what they deserve. You know, you have a corrections officer starting out at $40-some thousand a year. Mm. When you take insurance and everything else out of that's a take-home salary of $20,000. Who can live on that? There's no wonder why people are leaving the county. So we have to make the county a place where people want to work, mm-hmm. where they can grow, where there's some mobility, where they can get paid what they need to raise a family. And all that's going to be very difficult with the slim margins that we have now. So a lot of what I'm doing right now is trying to prioritize what are the core functions of the county that we need to do. What are some of the programs that are lower on the totem pole, so to speak, and how do we strategically organize each department so that we can pay people what they deserve within the current budget that we have? And what are other possible streams of revenue that we could look towards in the future?
Mm. That's really good. And, you know, you actually have a reputation for being responsible, but also innovative, right? Especially mm-hmm. from a fiscal perspective. How has your background as controller helped shape how you lead a complex county budget and ensure transparency for taxpayers? But also, you know, one of the biggest challenges today is polarization. How do you plan to lead for everyone while also maintaining that balance, being responsible and also innovative? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. I think the fact is that numbers don't really lie. Mm-hmm. Once you present the numbers, it's pretty clear what needs to get done. And if you're transparent with those numbers, it's really just readily apparent. So the one thing that I've learned from working on other boards and from working in controller's office is that the way that you communicate is, what have we done? What are we currently doing? And what do we hope to do if we get the funds that we need? If we don't get the funds that we need, what are the things that we will have to cut looking forward? I can remember being on the airport board during COVID and having them explain the budget on a monthly basis. In our finance reports, we would get an understanding of where the airport was, what money we were waiting on, why we were waiting on it, and we were able to prod and say, well, we need to get this. Why isn't this getting done? And there was more understanding. Mm-hmm. I think if there was more transparency, we would not have had the issue that was Greysdale this go-around, which was difficult because the money that was transferred to Greysdale that the Republicans were talking about when they put up those signs, where's the money, Lamont, and talked about where's the missing money. The money's not missing. It went to Greysdale. It just went for operational expenses. It didn't go for the expenses that county council had intended in their resolution. Mm-hmm. And so if there would have been more transparency at the time in 2023, when that transfer was being made to say, hey, look, we have this sum of money. Our priority is to pay the bills at Greysdale for the operation costs. Mm-hmm. We're not paying these vendors. We're not doing this. But we have this bucket of money that we can use. We're going to end the retention bonuses because they've been ended in the contracts by the unions. So we only actually need this much money. So we're going to take that money and we're going to put it over here. You do it in your own household.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
shift
and
funds.
Mm-hmm. Shift. Yeah, you have to shift things around to balance it and make it right. And if you're not there every day looking at the budget and you just catch something 2 years later, of course you're going to be stunned and you're going to ask questions like, why did this happen? Where did it come from? Where's the money? But if you're looking at the budgets every day, you know exactly where the money is. Somebody said something to me yesterday. They said, you know, if you want somebody to balance a budget and to spend things wisely, you get a single mom to do it. I always know how to spend money the right way and to get the money that I need to make things happen. I had 5 jobs when I was a county commissioner so that I could buy a house. I knew it was the right time in the market to buy a house, and I was going to buy one come hell or high water. I was getting out of that one-bedroom apartment with my kids. Mm. And I did, by the grace of God, I got a mortgage with all these different jobs just put together. Mm-hmm. I got letters from people. I had the income. I had the savings, and I made it happen. Mm-hmm. You can make things happen. You just have to know how to shift the money, prioritize what it is, and focus on that priority to make it become the reality. Mm-hmm. You know, and I feel like that's the same kind of philosophy that I take in looking at the county budget. Like, what are our priorities? Are we going to still have the priority of preserving environmentally sensitive land? Well, then we need to fund OSI, Open Space Initiative, and we also need to fund farmland preservation. If we want to reduce recidivism in the prison, we definitely need to fund the LEAP program, and we need to fund Pine Brook services so that people can get the mental health treatment that they need, because we know that the people who go into prisons aren't necessarily bad people. They need better skills, and if we could practice a more restorative sense of justice than a punitive sense of justice, we might have a better system and better people coming out of that system who can be productive citizens again instead of coming back in.
Mm-hmm. A lot of food for thought. When you think about the future, not just Northampton County, but of leadership itself, what gives you hope and what message do you want to leave with our listeners today?
That's kind of interesting because I really haven't been thinking about that much, but this campaign 24/7 for almost since like January. I think the thing that gives me hope is when I'm on the doors and I'm talking to people and then I see them come out to vote, where I get almost 60% of the vote for the first woman. I think that radically says exactly what the people want, and that is more than a mandate. It says the people want change. It says the people like what I have to say. It says that they like my demeanor and how I carry myself, and how I organize this administration going forward will be the same way I organize my campaign. I want to treat people with respect. I want to recognize the humanity in other individuals, and I want to lift up those people and make sure that our community thrives.
It's an exciting time. Mm-hmm. Tara, your story is more than a political milestone. It's a story of courage, conviction, and breaking new ground. From educator to advocate, controller to county executive, you've shown that leadership rooted in empathy, accountability, and service can truly move a community forward. To our listeners, this conversation is a reminder that leadership doesn't wait for permission. It begins when you decide to use your voice, your values, and your vision to make a difference. Tara, thank you for blazing a new trail for Northampton County and for inspiring all of us to step up, stay hopeful, and keep pushing toward progress. I'm Melody Bradford. This has been Trailblazers on WDIY. Until next time, keep leading boldly, dreaming bravely, and building a future worthy of your passion. Mm-hmm.